And then item C is the general discussion. The commissioners and the directors will discuss current recent activities. Certainly it's been some of those. The first one, however, is I think we can get off the table relatively easily. The March meeting in 2013, we need to have a location set up. I've talked to Tammy and Aaron and Miranda, and they're looking at doing it in Moses Lake. This will be a meeting that will be focused definitely on hunting regulations. I'm wanting to do somewhere in central or eastern Washington. Moses Lake, if you remember, we were there a while back, and that room will be provided for us. It's already wired for phones and microphones, and it also is of no cost to us. So that's kind of where we're leaning to. We're open to other suggestions. Any other commissioners have other thoughts?
It was a very nice location last time we were there.
Agreed.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
I think this is an economically good location as well as it's centrally located for, I think, most of the stakeholders, so I think that would be good. We need to, we'll defer the others, meeting sites and meeting locations until we get more information relative to our budget and see what our election looks like. But we need to declare this one to get the notices out. So with that understanding, I'll have Tammy go ahead and start making arrangements for us to go to March in Moses Lake.
Yeah, Mr. Vice Chair, Commissioner Smith here. I think it is important, as hopefully the budgets do and get better, and that we start to get around the state a little bit. I just think we owe it to different folks around the state. So I just wanted to put that on the table when the winds shift to the positive.
Yeah, I agree with that. And in fact, I got a request yesterday while we were in Portland to maybe have a meeting down in the south east corner of our state at Clarkston, somewhere less where we haven't been there for a long, long time. So. And I think everyone needs to start thinking about alternative locations, and we'll compare that to our budget and see how it fits in. So, the second item we have here is our fire update and impacts on opening weekend of hunting. Director Anderson, you want to lead us in that discussion?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Vice Chair. I'll turn this over to Greg Sherrato from our wildlife program, give you an update on those matters.
Thank you, Commission members. Different arenas, I think, that we've talked in committee on the fire has a couple different facets. One of the ones that I think that all of you had received calls had to do with access for permit hunters primarily. And so we've looked at all the hunts that were impacted by fires or fire season closure. Our focus has been the Eastern Washington fires, but as you see, as I go through the numbers, the bigger impact is actually on the private industrial timberlands in Western Washington, where there were not fires, but they have the typical seasonal closures due to dry conditions. And so we went through all the potential hunts, permit hunts that could be impacted, and we came up with 15 Eastern Washington hunts and 9 Western Washington permit hunts where we are going to do requests through the director emergency extensions on those seasons and allow those individual hunters to have additional hunt days later in the season. That amounts to about 260 permits in Western Washington and only 14 permits in Eastern Washington. In addition, we looked at areas where and we kind of looked at that as either areas that needed to have animals removed because of damage or population concerns, or once in a lifetime hunting opportunity, difficult to draw points or get drawn for. And then in addition, we have 26 individuals, 5 hunts where we'll restore their points, hunts that are more common or easily drawn, and there weren't opportunities to move the dates because of other user conflicts. So that's the first part is on the permit hunters. The second aspect, as I mentioned, the industrial timberlands are really significant access points in western Washington, and most of those lands were still closed on the opening of the black-tail deer in western Washington. Their DNR, Forest Service, other state lands were open. Most all those companies by Monday have reopened their lands, so all those industrial timber lands are now open. And in addition, we've rolled back, Phil rolled back the emergency restrictions we had on our own lands, as well as other natural resource agencies, fire restrictions, running generators, those types of activities, that smoking that were prohibited on our own lands. So this is in relation to hunting season. On the habitat side, our staff and enforcement staff continue to work with landowners that maybe experience increased deer at haystacks, looking at options on that. Many of the fires had dozer lines cut as fire breaks. All of those dozer lines have been reseeded, part of the restoration work. In addition, we've identified contingency plans if we need to feed in those areas that were burned. I think I shared with the Wildlife Committee members the summary, but we burned at the max about 6% of our winter range, primarily in the Chelan area. It's probably the harder hit area, but we have contingency plans, identified feeders available if we need to gear up for a winter feeding aspect in those areas. We still have significant infrastructure damage on our lands. We have a supplemental request in at $4.2 million. It's a combination of fire suppression costs. We're contracted with DNR, as well as the big ticket item is the fences were burnt down. We've identified some dollars to repair some of the areas of Weenass Fire, for instance. We have several miles of elk fence that have burned down and would allow the elk to access private lands, and so we began fence repairs in some of those fire areas so that we can keep elk from accessing adjacent private. That I'd take any questions or any of the details you might desire.
Has there been any significant migrations or movements of elk or deer that are causing problems or changing what would the hunting normal opportunities?
Not so much changing hunting opportunities. We have seen in the Thorpe area outside Ellensburg where we had an elk herd causing some problems. We didn't want elk in that area. I think it was a herd of about 50. We worked with master hunters and landowner permits to get the elk out of the damage area. So they essentially moved on to irrigated pastures in the area of the Taylor Bridge fire. So, in that case, we work with landowners. It gets dicey. That's small private owners in Thorpe. So one neighbor may want the animals there and feed them, and the next neighbor doesn't want them in their alfalfa or Timothy. And so that gets to be a little bit complex, but we have staff there that continue to work with landowners. So that's the only area where we really have seen, and adjacent to the Park Creek fire in Ellensburg as well, we've had to have individuals at night, volunteers, master hunters, help get animals out of some of the, again, irrigated pastures there.
Good. Have we been able to put out a public notice that we're trying to be friendly with the user groups and accommodate hunters that have been inconvenienced by this?
Haven't done a public notice on that. We've handled the calls and contacted the individuals. One of the confusions that we were cautious about, individuals were, I'll use the term panicking, but they were nervous about some of their hunts, and they sent back their permit. And it turned out the hunts, that weekend, the hunts were open. And so then we had this whole problem where they were ready to hunt and they didn't have their permits. And so we were trying to tell people, and we've called these individuals, so instead of a press release, and the number of individual permit hunters is a really small subset of all licensed hunters. And so I mentioned the numbers here impacted, we're less than 300. So we've made calls to these individual hunters. So there's hunts where we're daily telling the people, yep, this area is open, a larger area is open. And particularly we track some of the really high profile hunts like that, the goat hunts, the sheep hunts, which we were quite nervous about, or some of the quality permits as well. So I'd say the approach has been more of individual phone calls to the impacted parties rather than a press release.
I think there's some significant goodwill that we can gain from those that maybe didn't have those permits, but they're hunters, and try to build the image that we are a friendly, positive group to work with by saying the kinds of things like we've accommodated these people, and I think there's some significant goodwill we could earn if we got it out to all hunters, seeing as we just raised all their prices significantly. They would like to see us maybe working more closely with them to make sure they have a positive hunting experience.
Yeah, and I would like to think we always work well with them and have their interests at heart. I understand that the point. I'm looking at Darren to see a little bit, again, not to get people that start turning in permits or have other concerns, but because definitely there's individuals that were inconvenienced, normally hunt a private industrial timberland, and they end up having to hunt DNR on the first weekend. And so, I think that's get that message out there. How do we structure that? I'd have to work with outreach to understand that better.
Commissioner Duvia, this is Joe Storr. We'll take that suggestion and talk to the public affairs office about how we could, I don't know if it's on the internet or you know, some sort of a release, but just make people aware that the fires disrupted some of the planning and processes around hunting seasons, and we, you know, taken steps to make that as easy as we could and adapt to provide those opportunities. So we'll have that discussion with Bruce folks.
Yeah. Go ahead. And I just think it's an opportunity you might want to consider to take credit for doing a good job.
They worked hard on it. The wildlife program worked really hard to try and adapt. So
we have a web posting that outlines the kind of addressing some of the public questions about winter feeding, about the impacts that the fires had on deer and elk, and so it's possible to include the note on, and we don't have it in currently in our what we drafted to put up on the web, so it's really pretty simple, I think, to include that highlight and take some credit for that on that posting as well.
Any other comments, questions on the fire update? Hearing none, we'll go to an open discussion on the Columbia River fishery update. As everyone is aware, our delegated commissioners of Mencken, Carpenter, and myself attended Oregon in commission in Portland yesterday for a full day discussion, along with numerous people from our staff, including our director. And maybe Director Anderson would like to kind of give us an overview of the day's output.
Thanks, Mr. Vice Chair. Commissioner Duvia said, we had our second meeting of the Columbia River Work Group. It was well attended by members of the public. I don't know exactly how many members were there, but I would estimate somewhere in the neighborhood of 150 or so in the morning. After we adjourned for lunch, probably we're down to 50 or 60, and by the time we adjourned at about 4:40 yesterday afternoon, we were down to about 20 of the public that stuck with us for the day. We started our day by having a short presentation from the commercial fishery, followed by a short presentation from by advisor Jim Martin, who's an Oregon advisor. Bruce Buckmaster provided a brief overview and perspective from the commercial side. We had a joint staff report that we went through, and the specifics from us. We're looking at the spring fishery, the summer fishery, and the fall fishery separately. Each one of those has kind of four components or elements to them. One is the allocation between sport and commercial. Another is production. What is the current production and what additional production is in the proposal as it's currently crafted? What gear would be allowed to be used, i.e. gill net, tangle net, alternative gear, and then where, location, main, and primarily main stem versus what we call safe areas. There's four safe areas. Three of them are on the Oregon side. One is on the Washington side. The spring and summer fisheries, I think, are more straightforward in those four element areas. There is a transition, what we're calling a transition period, such that if there was going to be a significant change both in the allocation between sport and commercial and to offset part or in the loss to the commercial fishery in the main stem, it would be offset or mitigated by production in the safe areas where we'd have increased production, increased catches by the commercial fisheries to try to offset or mitigate that loss. The fall fishery is has those components as well. However, at least from my perspective, it's a bit more complicated in that we have Lower River Tule, which is a hatchery Chinook production issue, and wanting to make sure that we remove as many of those hatchery fish as possible to be in conformance with hatchery reform. That's complicated because the wild component of the Tule population is listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. There's a second component, which is the what we refer to as the upriver brights, a Chinook population, natural spawning populations, spawns in the Hanford Reach, is a healthy population of fish. And this particular run really is, if there's a backbone of the commercial fishery, this is it. So how do we go about crafting both from a transition period that is generally being represented as that time period between 2013 and 2017, if we're going to remove all types of gill nets out of the main stem, how do we go about providing opportunity on upriver brights to the commercial fishery? The plan contemplates further development of alternative gear that is more selective in nature that would allow this to occur. And there are, in that it has not been developed to the point where there's certainty about whether that harvest could take place of upriver brights, that is a particular issue in the fall fishery. The third component in the fall fishery is the coho fishery. We have substantial hatchery surpluses of coho, particularly in the late run, that returns and is available for harvest in the river in October. So how do we go about ensuring against, again, both from an economic perspective, that we provide access to those hatchery surpluses, and also from a hatchery reform perspective, how do we ensure that we have the harvest capability to remove as many of those hatchery fish from the system and derive value from them, and also address the issues associated with hatchery interacting with natural spawning fish on the spawning ground. So we talked about each one of those issues, spring, summer, and fall, and we the Washington members of the work group, the commissioners, put a proposal on the table that was different in some aspects from what the joint staff report contained, and so we did have some dialogue about those differences and the rationale behind the proposals that came from the Washington commissioners during our meeting. There are several overarching components that are applicable to the package. Those components include such things as funding. There's a significant amount of funding required in order to make this package work. That funding is associated with both the additional production that would be needed to make the program work, as well as funding for development of additional off-channel sites on the Washington side, or additional what I'll call safe areas. So there's some funding associated with development of, and we have a couple of ideas where we might be able to expand safe areas to the Washington, on the Washington side. There's also issues associated with funding as it relates to a buyback program. One of the elements that was contained in the Washington Commissioner's proposal that they put on the table was consideration of a buyback program being a part of the package, understanding that the majority of the commercial activity after this package was fully implemented would be in the safe areas, and that the safe areas have limited space, limited to the extent that it would not accommodate the number of fishers that are participating in the fishery today. An additional component is what we're calling the adaptive management component. And essentially, the adaptive management component is that there are a lot of things that need to happen during the transition period between 2013 and 2017 in order for the package to be implemented in its entirety. And there is some level of risk or doubt as to whether all of those elements could be successfully implemented. So the adaptive management piece is really what will be monitoring of the implementation of the plan, and then if the plan does not achieve its objectives, in other words, if the production doesn't produce the number of fish that is anticipated to, or the alternative gear isn't developed that allows the continued harvest of, for example, upriver brights or fall coho, what do we do? What modifications do we make to the package? So that's really what the adaptive management piece is primarily about, is the monitoring of the implementation of the plan, the measurement of the performance of the elements of the plan, and then, but it doesn't predetermine an outcome. In other words, if the production falls short by, say, 20% of its expected outcome, it doesn't prescribe what the response is. Am I missing one? I'm doing this off memory, not off note, so pardon me if I'm forgetting something. Again, recognizing that the purpose of the work group is to come up with a recommendation that the work group members, and the work group members are described, are defined as the six commissioners, three from each state, that those six commissioners can agree or come to a consensus on, and then that recommendation would go back to the independent governing bodies of the commissions from each state for consideration and potential adoption. That's the overall goal. And so there's a lot of, as you can maybe begin to glean from my brief description of the elements of the package, it's a fairly comprehensive, complex package that is also dependent on a number of things happening in order for it to be fully implemented. We have, as I said at the outset, this was our second meeting. I think there was some, maybe some optimistic belief when we started this that we could complete this conversation and have a package ready that would be come back to the independent governing bodies after the second meeting of the work group. It became readily apparent that that was overly optimistic and that there would be a need for a third meeting of the work group. So one of the things that came out of yesterday, setting of a meeting of a third meeting of the work group, which would occur on November 15th in Astoria, Oregon. And so that was scheduled. Each commission has a meeting prior to November 15th, at which time it's anticipated they will take public comment on the package as it is now constructed. And the package as it is now constructed is primarily based off the joint staff report, and it also includes the proposals that came from the Washington Wildlife Commissioners as sub-alternatives within that package. So, for example, let me give one example, in the summer Chinook, the allocation that's in the joint staff report differs from what was put on the table by the Washington commissioners, in that it goes to a full 100% allocation to the sport fishery under the Washington commissioner's proposal, and it's capped at 80-20 in the joint staff report. So that's an example of where there's a difference. And there are some other differences as well that I won't try to identify right now. So, again, each commission will have a meeting. Ours is on November 8th and 9th, Thursday and Friday. Right now, I believe that we're scheduled to take up the Columbia River issue on Thursday, November 8th. And then the Oregon Commission has a one-day meeting that will occur on November 9th, Friday, November 9th. So we're anticipating, of course, that both commissions will receive a substantial amount of public comment regarding the package as it is now structured during those meetings. Following that, then, on November 15th, the work group would meet again, with the objective of coming out of that with a finalized package that the objective is to have a final package where there is consensus of the six commissioners that recommendation then would be sent off to the two commissions for consideration. So that's the, and then the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission, of course, has its meeting in December. And if all of this works out as planned, it would be at the December meeting that the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission would consider whatever work product and recommendation came out of the work group process. So, Mr. Vice Chair, that's my, whatever that was, 5-7 minute attempt to try to summarize what's occurred in this process up to now. And again, I did it without any notes, so if there are other members of the work group that can fill any holes that I left, please do so.
Thank you, Director Anderson. I think that was pretty spot on, and we're trying to make sure that everyone gets the information sent to them as we have it sent to the representatives we have on this panel. We also would like to have any commissioners call one of the members of our delegation to go into detailed discussions of it to keep you up to speed, knowledge, and comfort, so that when we get down to the final decision in December, we have shared all the information that helps you know what's the right decision for the resource is. So please feel free to call any of us. We're all open for that to discuss it. And I think we're working on some new modeling of these two changes. Is that correct, Director? We get the fish numbers that we represent currently, as well as down the road when we do the additional production.
Sorry, I didn't quite understand the question. There's certainly some additional work that staff will be doing. One of the things that came out of the discussion toward the end of the day is that came from Bobby Levy, the chair of the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission, and of course they're working and trying to stay close to the instructions that were provided to Governor Kitzhaber, and one of those points that she made was that the current package that's in the joint staff report is estimated to have a negative impact on the commercial fishery of between, I believe it's 5% and 11%, and that's from an economic ex-vessel value perspective. Governor Kitzhaber's letter stresses the need to have, at the end of the day, as the entire package is implemented, that there are benefits that are derived by both the commercial and the recreational fishery, and in the interim period, that there is little or no harm done to either sector. So Bobby Levy, in particular, asked for the staff to modify the package that was in the joint staff report that would reduce the economic harm to the commercial fishery to something between 0% and 5%. So there's certainly going to be some modeling done with respect to that proposal, some potential modifications to the pieces that are in the staff report to achieve that outcome. So that's one thing in particular that I can think of, Mr. Vice Chairman, that came out of yesterday's conversation that would involve some additional modeling.
Yeah, and I think the other one I heard that at the meeting was we do a lot of the allocation on the basis of impacts, but we wanted to convert that to number of fish. So we see at the end of the 4-year or 5-year period what it hopefully will look like. Is that still one of the tasks that we're looking at doing?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, that's we need to do that in order to make a calculation on what the economic impact is to both the recreational and commercial fisheries. So we would need to convert the percentage impacts that structure the allocation into the anticipated harvest so that we can get both from on the recreational side, an angler trip quantification then helps us determine the economic impact, as well as on the commercial side to understand the numbers of fish, average size of the fish, the price of the fish to determine the expense value result, so that we can estimate whether or not there's a gain or loss as a result of the package.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Any other questions or additions to the director's summary? Hearing none, thanks very much, Director. That was, I think, really well done and covered a pretty comprehensive, difficult subject. So are there any other areas for discussion at this time by any of the commissioners or staff? Hearing none, I guess I will adjourn the conference call. It's 9:32 on October 19th, 2012. Thanks, everybody, for attending. Everybody have a good weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. Looking forward to it. Bye-bye.
Thank you.